Out and About London, Crowded Hours, by Thomas Burke. What does the Cockney's mind first register when, far from home, he visualizes the London that he loves with a casual devotion of his type? To the serious tourist, London is the shrine of England's history. To the ordinary artist who sees life in line and colour, it is a city of noble or delicate bits. To the provincial, it is a playground. To the businessman, a market. But to the Cockney, it is one big club. Odorous of the goodly fellowship that blossoms from contact with humankind. Far from the madding crowd may express the longings of the modern simian stylites. But your Cockney is no simian. He doesn't pray to be put upon an island where the crowds are few. The thicker the crowd, the more elbows that delve into his ribs, the hotter the steam of humankind, the happier he is. Far from the madding crowd be blowed. Man's place, he holds, is among his fellows. And he sniffs with contempt at this widespread desire to escape from other people. To him it is the sign of an unhealthy mind, if not pure blasphemy. So, when he thinks of London, he does not think of a city of palaces or serene architectural triumphs, of a huckster's mart or a playground. At the word London, he sees people, the crowds in the Strand. In Walsworth Road, Lavender Hill, Whitechapel Road, Camden Town High Street, your moods may be various, and London will respond. You may work, you may idly dream away the hours, or you may actively enjoy yourself in play. But if you wish that supreme enjoyment, the enjoyment of other people, then London affords opportunities in larger measure than any city that I know. I discovered the magic and allure of crowds when I was 14 years old and worked as an office boy in those filthy alleys marked in the postal directory as EC. Streets and crowds became my refreshment and entertainment then, and my palate is not yet blunted to their savour. I do not want the flowery mead or the tree-covered lane or the insect-ridden glade. At least, not for long. And I hate that dreadful hollow behind the little wood. Give me 6 o'clock in the evening and a walk from the city to Oxford Circus, through the soft spring or the darkling autumn, with festive feet whispering all around you, and your heart filled with that grey-green romance which is London. Once out of Newgate Street and across Holborn Viaduct, I was happy. For I was, so to speak, in a foreign country, so wholly different with the people of Holborn from the people of Cheapside. The crowds of the city had always, to me, a mean, craven air about them. They walked homeward with lagging steps and worn faces. They seemed always preoccupied with paltry problems. They carried the stamp of their environment. A dusty marketplace in which things made by more adept hands and brains are passed from wholesale place to wholesale place with sorry bargaining on the odd halfpenny, but west and west central were the pleasuance of the finer essences, and involuntarily body and soul assumed there a transient felicity of gait. One walked and thought suavely. There were noble shops, brilliant theatres, dainty restaurants, highways whose sole business was pleasure, rent with gay lights, and oh, so many delightful people. At restaurant and theatre doors, one might pause pensively and touch fingertips, as it were, with rose-leaf grace and beauty and fine comradeship. A refreshing exercise after encounters with the sordid and the uncouth in Gracechurch Street. Then, when the hoofs clattered and the motors hooted and the whistles blew, and streets were drenched with festal lights and festal folk, I was, I felt, abroad. Figure to yourself that you are walking through the streets of Tehran.